Well, in that case, I will try and move on. Much as the detail of about 62 slides, we will therefore not get into all of it. Some of the slides will give you statistics on breakdown of certain numbers. We try to give the breakdown by province so that we can be able to get a feel on the national scale of the issues that we're doing. I'll start with my subject as we begin with the half of a team. I guess also the SMT can also have a different job that we're going to need to identify. My name is Joseph Opaga, I'm the acting chief executive officer of the agency.
My name is Mark Akara Mokoba. begin nothing from the national development, international development of police, again, and education over time.
In terms of the outline of the implementation report, four parts, and we will move quickly through those four parts. I will deal with the first two parts and then hand over to the CFO to quickly go through the last two parts as well on time. On slide number four, on page 12, we are reading from the same veteran. We have outlined the money for FAFA. I'm not going to go into detail. It's derived money from the Constitution. More specifically, section 17, which speaks to everyone having the right of access to social security, especially those who cannot support themselves and their dependents, and the right of access to social assistance. We also look at the Social Assistance Act, as well as social, South African Social Security Act, which is found in the legislation of FAFA. Well, the slide 5, which I also just reminded members about our vision, which is indeed very ambitious. We're looking at FAFA in the long run, competing with its counterpart in the world in terms of the provision of social security. So we look at ourselves as an agency that aspires to be a world-class agency. On the mission, we have a statement that indicates that FAFA's mission is to administer quality social security services cost-effectively and timely in appropriate best practices by developing and implementation of policies and programs and procedures that will ensure effective and efficient social grant administration. And so promotion and protection of human dignity is very important for us, and deliver innovative, cost-effective and efficient services to individuals and families and the community at large. In terms of our strategic objectives, we've agreed on four key areas in our strategic plan, which we're reporting against now. The first one is to ensure a high-performing institution. In that area, we're really focusing on some of the key or core pillars that will ensure that we achieve that mission, I mean that objective, among others, for instance, being a well-capacitated and trained personnel, a well-advanced IT system, and also ensuring that we've got supportive administrative frameworks and processes and procedures that will ensure that we do able to monitor our performance and also invest improvements in them. That also then focuses ourselves on the second objective of focusing on improvements in service delivery. In that regard, we have initiatives that we will share with the members in regards to our focus in that specific area. In the third one, the improvement of operational excellence, which basically ensures that all the necessary requirements like human resources as well as financial systems are in place to ensure that we are indeed cutting costs on how we do our business. We will also share with the members some of the major initiatives that we are embarking on to ensure that we improve cost effectiveness. And lastly, obviously, we can always support our business to ensure that we adhere to good corporate governance principles in line with the King 2, now the new King 3 report. In terms of the strategic priorities, the areas that were identified, four areas. One, the continuation of the institutional reform and building of the South African Social Security Agency. Yeah, it's still the work that we do around the establishment process. ensuring proper functioning in regional offices as well as district and local offices. The second part is the implementation of legislation and policy initiatives. We also share with the members some of the new initiatives during the year under review or during the period of reporting that we have implemented. The third one is the benefits, administration, and payment service reforms and improvements. And lastly, in this fraud prevention and detection. Then the next slide speaks to our theme, which is our mantra, basically, paying the right social grant to the right person at the right time and paying the child. Let's move quickly to slide number 12. Here we are dealing with each of the priorities in a little bit detail. The third priority on institutional reform and the building of platform. There have been continuous improvements in most local offices and take points in terms of access and service provision to beneficiaries. We invested also in the infrastructure improvement at various take points across the country. Indeed, the challenges are quite enormous. I know there will be a number of areas where we are still lacking in terms of improving our conditions and payments specifically when it comes to infrastructure and environment. So this is the thing to say. We have still challenges when it comes to office accommodation and the supply of the relevant ICT network. But we will share with the committee about all the members that are, I mean the managers are responsible as well, what alternative measures we are putting in place to address some of those challenges. In terms of the enhancing integrity of the grant process, we developed an ICT service delivery infrastructure network to support the grant administration and payment processes. Part of the work that we do is to focus on automation of application processes. We have a project that's protected, which essentially aims at improving the application by implementing a management information system that will ensure that we can process applications and finalize them within a day. We call it one day general strategy. We also managed to interface with other systems to verify eligibility data of the applicant. The most important one that I can mention is the home affairs system, as well as the PEPFAR, where we can be able to pick that a person in fact is indeed a participant citizen, and also we can actually pick in two instances when a person is taking some salary from government in a cycle, and then we can then put up measures, better measures to verify whether the person is indeed eligible for that particular grant. In terms of our other measures like the link test, etc. The first phase of the implementation of the MIS was finalized in all the regions. Basically, that is the registry module that were rolled out. We have now applied for additional funding from Treasury to look at rolling out, because the only problem where we have piloted the other modules is the first phase. We are looking at, of course, we have seen the benefits of the IGF in the state and the MIS. We want to roll it out to the country, and it will improve significantly the efficiency level in terms of the application processes. Lastly, there is now a central record management center for this process. In terms of the improvement of organizational capacity, there are some of the issues that we have done. This is not the comprehensive list, but we felt we should share with the committee some of these initiatives, like the development of a code of conduct in ethical platform. Because of its nature and the kind of business that we are involved in, and the amount of vulnerability to fraud and other practices that are uncanny, if you like. Like corruption or corrupt activities, it is very essential for us to have a code of conduct and also ensure our staff are by taking ethical standards. The development of a protocol guideline to foster a culture of professionalism within the context of the Constitution, the contract and litigation management framework was developed to promote uniformity in the management and administration of contracts and litigation. If we look at the statistics, we actually have significantly reduced the number of litigation cases that we suffer, especially when it comes to grant administration related matters. The framework has also resulted in the reduction of cases from 41,500 in 2006-07. Now, in 2009, we only have 153 cases, which is a testimony to the fact that the strategy is very effective. We also have short-term vision in the management of contracts across Papua, which is another measure that has actually contributed to the improvement in the litigation agenda. The second priority on legislation and policy implementation on social assistance, some of the achievements there, we currently are aware over 30 million South Africans now receive social assistance, and the breakdown of that number is still like 9 million, around 9 million of those are children, that's about 3 million are older persons, and all then the rest 1.2 million is people with disabilities. The number of people receiving grants increased from 12.3 million in 2008. Which is now just about 30 million, which represents a growth rate of about 5.2%. Slide number 15 just now gives you the breakdown of the grant per province in terms of numbers. It comes to the 30 million at the bottom right block there. The columns, maybe for benefit of the members, just to interpret them, I think the regions are EP, Eastern Cape, etc. But ONG is Old Age Grant, WVG is War Veteran Grant, DG is not a DG, that to me is a disability grant, GIA is Grant in Aid, FCG is Foster Care Grant, and CDG is Care Dependent Grant. CSG, Child Support Grant. That's for members to be able to understand what those columns are about. As you can see, the biggest number is in KZN at 3.3 million beneficiaries, followed by different cases at 2.3, and then the Koko, and then followed by Housing. The list with the Northern Cape at about 329,000 grants. Now, the next slide also shows certain steps in terms of the numbers again for the two, at least the comparison of the two financial areas to show the actual growth rate. You will notice that this took a decline in the disability grant from 2007 to 1.4 and 1.286 and 2.89. The result of that, if you look at the bottom footnote, the last leg, is that the decrease was due to a 90% reduction in temporary disability grant backlog. Because the direct backlog in the review, what we should be reviewing this grant on a regular basis, especially the temporary disability grant. So that has resulted in a number of farmers in grants being lapsed. But also, as you know, the normal movement when you reach a certain age of maturity, 60 years now, you move to the old age grant from the disability grant. If I may go straight to the new policy reforms that were implemented during that period, 2008-09, as you know, the ongoing equalization of age between men and women. We were dealing with the ages of 63 and 64. As of April this year, everybody now will be getting a grant next year, whether you are a man or a woman. So we dealt with the 4-year-old men, and in total we captured 106,109 males in 2015. We can go to detail later in terms of the conduct in that influence and how much was the amount. A gradual expansion of CSG. Now this year, you know, 1st of January, we're now moving to 15 years as and 10-15. And that last year it was 14 years as and 10-15. So we captured 30,800 applications for all those children by 31st March 2009. That is a period of about 3 months from January 2009, February, March. We already captured 30,806. You can look at that as it now, later, how much many children that we captured for the full term period. In terms of other reforms, as you know, we implemented the changes to the minister, allowing more persons access to social assistance to take from over 2008. The other one was the alternative identity documents. As you know, in terms of the regulation 11, we are now allowing people with not have a South African ID or who are still awaiting for that ID, as long as they can prove that they are indeed South African, and there is a clear requirement in terms of how you prove yourself to be South African, and also you have to find out the affidavit, and also certain references can be given or testimony can be given by people who are able to testify that you are indeed a one South African. Number of applications for alternative identity documents received during that period was 4,000. We are actually closely monitoring these beneficiaries because we identify them separately, suspend, so that we can follow up those who actually ultimately get their application for ID through, so that we can remove them, so that we don't get duplication. So there's a system of cross-checking those who are in the system as they get to apply for the ID document. We also ensure that we do a verification check to ensure that those people are infected with South Africa. Social relief assistance, I must have mentioned that there might be some risk because earlier on we were very reluctant, the department as well as the agency, to allow the alternative identification. But we have to weigh the benefits and costs of people who really should be deserving to get grants because the risk of other people who are non-South African friends and accessible that they don't do. But the numbers so far are not alarming. We're quite comfortable that this is still within reasonable limits in terms of the social relief of distress, we just did a feedback on that as well. You know, remember, during that period, we were allocated 124 million for social relief of distress, but because of the rising crisis and the beginning of the current economic crisis, where poor people were adversely affected by rising prices of either energy or food, the cabinet approved an additional allocation of 500 million, which was allocated to the agency for the and that brought the total amount to 224, and we actually spent that money in full. There were few commitments that were outstanding at the end of the year in the tune of 52 million, which Treasury approved the rollover thereafter, and we also paid off those commitments in the new financial year, which is the 9-10 financial year. In terms of targets that were reached, assistance, as members may recall, was provided in the form of food parcels mainly, but also in certain instances we gave them cash and cash vouchers. And in some regions, we also assisted poor children with food uniforms. a total of 755,707 people were speaking for FRC. Out of that, if you look at the breakdown, 500,000 food parcels or vouchers, 128,700 were school uniforms, 35,679 recipients for test payments, as well as the other recipients of about 32,000. I move to take priority number 3, benefit administration and payment service reform. The first one I talked to is the improved application process. We have standardized the application and review processes. By standardizing, basically we look at the entire value chain in terms of the people who accept the application, the people who approve the application, process, who process the application, doing their test functions and all that, and those who approve the application. We also identify that there are certain functions that need to be collapsed together. For instance, in certain regions, we had applications approved and district level, which really slowed down the process of our intention of a one-day turnaround. So we have now adopted an approach that says we need to devolve this function to local office level, where we have the relevant authorized people to approve applications on site, so that they can actually approve applications on time. Then the average turnaround time for a process of application in PASA decreased from 21 days to 9 days. You could look at or go back to history in the olden days, members would recall me. We have situations where applications would take anything within 3 to 6 months. But I think we have managed to reduce that on average across the country now, around 21 days. But only now we have managed to reduce it to 9 days. Unless there are queries or any other thing to follow that normal application where the beneficiary has all the relevant documentation, it should not take longer than 9 days indeed to process an application, or maximum 21 days. The application is piloting of the improved grant application process, as I indicated earlier, in the first stage, where we now be able to complete the application in 1 day. And we visited the sites where it has been piloted, like the Tabanchu and others. And this is happening where you actually get certain decisions in the letter of our we also embarked on an integrated service delivery initiative across the region, which is we call it the Integrated Community Registration Outreach Program, where we partner with other government departments and the critical stakeholder, the premier office, where we go to the communities, we have Home Affairs with their trust there, we have PASA with their trust, we actually identify all the children as well as adults that are supposed to be getting benefits, social assistance benefits that are not yet getting that, whether they don't have an ID or there's no death certificate, then we actually ensure that all those processes are done and people get their application processed. 500 ICOP programs in all regions were conducted, registered over 133,590 beneficiaries during that initiative. And 80% of those registered were child support grants. I think PASA is proud to indicate that we also implemented a customer care charter, which places the beneficiaries at the center of our core service delivery activity. We are still embarking on a massive orientation process for all our staff, especially at the frontline level, to understand the rights of the customer and also the obligations on themselves in terms of how they should be interacting with the customer. And the charter clearly identifies what the customer should do, whether you are looking for an application or you're making an inquiry, or you're lodging a complaint or inquiry, it's clearly indicated in the charter what charter the cattle of Mamas are actually following. We might just need to do more in educating our beneficiaries about the charter so that they understand it quite clearly. Improved payment services. We've developed contract and vendor management strategies, especially for our big contracts for grant payment services, which, as you may know, run into billions of rands. We standardize the service level agreements of those contracts, as I indicated. Basically, we look at inefficiencies in the old contracts. Remember, we inherited all the 9 contracts from the provinces, and they were not standardized. Some would have certain problems in the same company that is providing the same service in this province. It's got different terms and conditions for the same service provided in another province. So the initiative was basically to renegotiate and standardize those provisions to ensure that for the benefit of farmers. Our main objective was to reduce the enormous cost at which the service was delivered. We also monitor compliance of payment contractors with those service level agreements. We also implemented a monitoring tool to monitor services by cash contractors, which rather than the region taking corrective measures in improving the payment of grants. Much as there is this progress, there's still a lot that we are busy with to further improve on the SLA, especially when we renew this contract for the next step. We definitely want to ensure that we gradually move towards the world standards as they indicated, because we know we are still a country where the administration of those standards is very expensive compared to our counterparts elsewhere in the world. In terms of priority 3, benefit administration and payment services forms, as I indicated, this is one of our biggest initiatives. We're working very closely with the department as well as Treasury on this. We believe that the only way we'll be able to improve our services is to ensure that the experience of our services from the point of view of the beneficiary must be improved significantly. And also the challenges that they are facing, whether it's them having to queue for longer hours at pay points, or maybe having to be exposed to risk of robbery, etc. We need to come up with alternative measures as the agency to say how to repay our beneficiaries in a safe and reliable and human environment. We're really looking at that. Currently, as you say, if you have 70% beneficiaries paid in cash, which means basically you handle cash in transit, there are huge risks, and it's also very expensive because you need high cost related to insurance, services like social security that you must pay for, are basically the endangering of the lives of those who are carrying that cash. Because as we know, the cash case that we have been exposed to, some of those have invested on the beneficiaries, because some of the shooting would happen at pay points, and poor people would be exposed to that. And we only have 30 people who are paid through electronic payment. Our argument is that since 1994, there has been a significant rollout of banking infrastructure in the country. Now we have banking services in the township and in some peri-urban areas, and also now even in what we conventionally call the rural areas, we have some kind of infrastructure. Yes, we do have people who are still in the deep rural who are struggling to get to the network, but we believe that we need now to be rethinking the conventional method of paying people by way of cash. We have made people of Christian research, where we saw young people specifically, especially those who are still in child support grants, in the saying to us, we prefer to use the card system rather than go to the state court. In fact, they would move away from the nearest state court waiting and go to town just to get to use electronic payment. And also the other countries is that when they are in town, they are immediately able to do other things, like shopping and doing this thing through an electronic card. So we are building and negotiating with the current service providers around this issue, but also we are developing the payment model that's going to be looking forward in the future of how we're going to be paying grants as well. And we are in that regard promoting electronic payment. And whatever, there's no system that is perfect, you realize. What some people are saying, but you're removing people to tune in the bank and you just move them from the bank onto the bank. What are you going to do to deal with that challenge? We are already engaging the bank on this matter, and this year we are going to publish a proposal for all of the banks to come forward and negotiate on how Washington should provide special services for our old age people and other vulnerable clients that they will be serving. And we will be agreeing with them on the terms and conditions that you would like our beneficiaries to keep their mind. Therefore, the migration of beneficiaries is also not only beneficial to the point of view of the beneficiary, but also from government point of view. Currently, as you know, members, we pay about 2.9 billion on handling fees, which basically means the money we pay to handle that cash to the pay point. Now, we want to reduce that, and we have demonstrated since the beginning of 2009 that we can actually reduce this amount significantly. I think we saved about approximately 400 million just by moving people to electronic payments, but we are engaging children seriously to get more improvement and benefits to the customers. I'm spending most of time on being one here for the passion for this particular project. The disability management, again, this is an area that we are challenging on Shepherdson. We probably will engage during the question time in more detail, but we're looking at the doctors that are doing the assessment for us as well as the review for disability. We invest in these centers contracting or getting a service level agreement with the Department of Health, but we now have a model where we also contract doctors directly. We prove it to be very efficient because we take them through the processes so that they understand proper assessment policies. A total of 88,000 medical reviews were conducted to more than 10%, really more than 10% target, and the achievement of the discussion by indicating temporary grants and laws. In the area of fraud management, we have internal fraud management policies and strategies that are documented, but we also have a service level agreement with the SIU, especially the unit, since 2005. And it has been a long journey, but we have significantly saved money for the state, where a number of beneficiaries that were frozen in the system were removed, and some of the people, especially the public servants, were taken to task through the court of law and also forced to pay back the money, and they find the acknowledgement of theirs in that regard. I'll summarize that on the slide 27, where in that period under the 2,900 fraud cases were taken to court, and we had convictions of about 3,600. And also, besides those who are who have not been taken to court, who came and said we would like to find an acknowledgement of debt, we engaged with the law enforcement agent, the FIU, and they said some of the amounts where there is no significant fraud, or in some instances, people would claim that they were not aware that they were not supposed to be continuing receiving the benefit after they bought a particular door. We actually have that we will find an acknowledgement of debt with them and then we pay back that money. Which gives that figure to 9,911, and we have managed to pay 50.2 million. Then the next slide is not the breakdown of statistics. It's clear in the total cases, how many convictions, and we also saw the FIU prepared disciplinary files where we state the relevant provinces or provincial or national departments to follow up in terms of disciplining those employees, and also the number of AODs that we find and the value of the AODs, and also the projected savings, which is about 200,000 and a million rand given that year. We also embarking on a big project of cleaning up the dormant accounts. Dormant accounts essentially those accounts that have not been active. Either the beneficiary died or we suspect in some instances that it might have been a fraudulent account open, but since the FIU said a case in people would try to run away and leave that account in that particular bank. We have had problems with recouping those accounts because of certain provisions in the Bank Act and then telling us that there are certain laws that prevent them from diverging certain confidential information of their clients. But so far, through negotiations, we have managed to progress in this area. But Bank in Council advised that we should rather issue subpoenas to them so that they can be able to assist us in that regard. So we actually complied with that. This project is ongoing and we will be giving more updates on how far we are with the project during the course of this year. There is comparative figures again given on slide number 30, which are about the statistics. If you move to slide number 31, now you have a breakdown of your cases by province. Total cases investigated, those just brought before court, the number of cases finalized. This is now a historical information since 2005 to January 2010, the latest. That would give the committee the feel of the magnitude of what we're dealing with over time. And the next slide again gives further statistics of AOD's region. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. Slide 34, if you look at issues of good governance, and again, it speaks to some of the core pillars of good governance that we implemented, especially if I outline the internal audit function, which is functioning well with the functioning audit committee, as well as the risk management framework, the audit risk management committee, that works very closely with the internal audit unit, especially. There are specific roles of connection to the FIU as well as the auditor general. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I'm trying to suggest that now we move to the financial analysis or the part of the presentation, where we will be now talking numbers. And if you allow me, Chair, I can now ask the CFO, who is sitting at the far corner there, to take us through quickly on the
when you look at slide number 36, you see that our budget for transfer was 4.6. So this is only the budget for the administration tax of transfer. And of that 4.6 billion, we spent 5 billion. Which were over 9%, which translates to 400 million that we overweight. And if you go to the slide 37, you'll see the reason being that why we are over is due to the fact that we had an inadequate budget for handling fees, which is the money we use to pay for our transaction fees for paying the paying contractor. The agency establishment cost, because we haven't yet finalized the establishment of the agency by taking offices and actually ensuring that the expenditure and other issues as well as the rollout of the district and local offices. As you see today, we're still running short of actually expanding our services to our clients due to the sanitary constraints, which has now affected us. However, what we are saying is that the major spending items have been on housing fees, and I think when the acting CEO was saying he's frustrated about the migration, it's because we know that part of the savings that we're going to get when people actually are not paid under these horrible conditions. Most of the planned spending on capital was held because we have implemented austerity measures. Seeing that we had this program of planning on the end, we went to Treasury's request for an overdraft supported by our National Department of Social Development, and Treasury is considering its property fees. We have already established a joint task team between DSD, Treasury, as well as SASA that oversees to ensure that we stay within the budget. The slide number 89, that one depicts the whole budget. When you look at the SASA administrative budget, it's 4.6 million. You add the social link of distress, then you add the grant budget, which is 70 billion, then we amount to 75 billion. So with a 0 there. I want, because already those have been covered by the CEO, I think I'll move to slide. The other already have been covered in the report. I will actually move right away to slide number 41, which talks about the rollover request. In terms of the SRP, the sanitary assistance of 2025, that's not SRP, that's the social assistance grant money, and part of that money was saved in terms of the big money, but there was commitment on SRP amount to 2, which a rollover was requested, and actually was granted. I won't go to the rest of the other slides because the CEO has already summarized them. If I go to the Auditor General report as four, the agency has received and qualified for the report for 2 consecutive years. However, there are 3 unnecessary practices which the AG was concerned about. Slide number 53. The AG was concerned about is the asset management and the mobile truck, which has said the previous expenditure on the mobile truck and the regular expenditure. Those 3 items we have since developed an action plan to address them. And on the grant, the big money, we had problems with the grant debtors as well as the FRB procurement. In relation to the procurement part of it as well as the regular expenditure on the SRP. Just to share some of the remedial actions that we have taken in terms of asset management, the agency barcode edition and wide verification of physical assets, duplicate assets and dummy barcodes were identified and are in the process of being removed from the asset register. Actually, as I speak today, they are removed. Assets without barcodes were labeled and were taken onto the asset register. Incorrect asset descriptions were identified, corrected on the asset register. Asset packages were labeled and taken onto the asset register. Intangible assets were identified, taken onto the asset register. Redundant, absolute, or missing assets were identified for disposal and write-off. The data on the current asset register, which is our board system, is being changed, revalued in terms of the useful life and migrated to the actual asset register to comply with draft standards. A consultant has been employed to assist us with the migration from cash to accrual accounting. Asset register are being decentralized to regional level. The exercise will be finalized before the end of March. With regard to the previous expenditure on the mobile, an investigation was done and it has compensed. We have now seen the financial misconduct. This is made recommendation in terms of the speed and step, and the reservation is actually policy way to ensure that the responsible officials are being held accountable. And that any day, the Minister of what is the meeting. On slide number 57, in terms of irregular, these irregulars cover the expenditure in terms of controller budget services by head office and regions. The total amount of 29 was condoned as irregular in 2008 and 9. This includes expenditure in terms of 2008, but condoned in 8 and 9. We were trying to clean up and ensuring that we get our house in order. And I think at the moment, all processes now are being followed in terms of the procurement process. We have already trained supply chain officials to be more understand the procurement, and in that training session took place in October as well as in November with 11 construction managers to update them in terms of what processes they need to follow. People are now followed throughout our time to first impose against any perpetrator of our process. Chairperson, I think that, you know, finishes my presentation. I try to be quick so that we can answer questions if there are any other questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Denise, with this presentation that you just made. And welcome to the minister. What I want to say, the minister, is that I want to comment on my friend. This is not the steps that we are taking to dealing with the issues such as the fraudulent activities and cases. I know we have to use part of the presentation. Now the department is able to focus on Monday. And also, the establishment of that, I my own observation is that because we could be made of the department, and there's a lot of high professionalism and ensuring that the turnaround time as far as the council is also improved. The attitude also of the officials, many people have accepted to that radical change on the ground. And at this stage, I would like to call on the members of the committee to interrogate the presentation. And let me take this opportunity from my side and ask all the questions. I know the department at a provincial level is used to experience the problem of electricity in provinces. I just want to know whether we have been able to deal with that problem. Whether sometimes we find that violence that are sourced elsewhere and we're unable to deal with the violence, whether yes or not the problem. And the issue of the food structure program, which was raised of the department, is what has changed and what has happened to those beneficiaries that have been benefited from food structure.
But this is
specific, this is what happened, we cannot do for this. Others would like to say that next year this time, if that is the same, I will surely ask the minister to take action against this, because it will not be acceptable for this committee to see regular expenditures like this again. Thank you.
Number three.
Mm-hmm.
Number three.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a few questions around for the Department of Funds. In the Department this year, we need the other recipients for around 15,000. Can you just elaborate on that other recipient? On social relief and distress. That's the one question. The other one is about the president announced on his speech that government wants to give more money to the unemployed youth. Did you already investigate that, and did you come up with some idea how the department will accommodate that? And I'm a bit worried because the department just tell us that the money which they receive is not adequate, and now there is a new kind of support for the community out there, poor people there. And then the other one is around the recovery of the money from the torture. Is there a measure which the department keeps in touch with that those who sign that agreement, that they did pay that money back to the department, and what is the amount or maybe the percentage getting that money from those people? Because it's very easy to sign an agreement, but the implementation of it tells us how success will be made. And then the overspending of the 4 million. Plus minus 4 million rand, 400 million. You see, if there's no measure or maybe a model in the department to follow up strictly every 3 months how the money is spent, then there will be that situation that the department will understand. Is there such a model? And who's following it up and who's making sure that model is implemented? Because this overspend with 400 million, in my view, I cannot condone that, as it's actually legal, especially in the structure of the financial department, and that is not acceptable. Then on page 119 of this document, I see there is consultants and contractors, special services of, let me just see how can I add it, the 2 billion? 2,514,760.
Okay. 2.5 billion.
Yeah. 2.5 billion. On contractors spent. So, if the department overspent with 400 million, then I think during the year 2008-2009, somebody in the financial department, in this department, can maybe see to it that there can be less money spent on these items. And then that will be through the 400 million rand that was spent in this department. So we must, in the department, identify a group of people to see that the spending of money must be spent according to the plan of the department. And not after a year find out that we overspent on our plan. So, I'm definitely saying there that a plan of department.
said that in the past, it's not a good thing to take out in the community that we as the department can't spend, can't spend our money as we plan for. Thank you.
Challenges for the people both in the warehouse, you may find that there are
issues of health hazards, rather fire hazards that we need to deal with. There are issues of recovery plans that we need to be putting in place, maybe automating those records so that we can actually file them electronically by backing on those processes. But they are not coming cheap. What we've done in some of the regions, we've outsourced this particular, in case they can, we've outsourced this particular function to an outside party. We are now looking at the pros and cons of doing it in-house or outsourcing it, because we already have now experience in doing this in the field. Since then, we're for five. So one of the benefits of outsourcing is that you can set up specific standards to take within the service level agreement. These are the minimum standards I want. You also transfer the risk of this to the outside party. The downside of is that we need to ensure that these are records of South Africans who are vulnerable and sensitive information might be included in those files, especially when it comes to disability grants, etc. So you need very strict measures to ensure that those things do not get exposed to that kind of thing. So this is the assignment we are dealing with now in our last week in our strategy planning session, which we come up to a final conclusion. But we are pretty much aware of the challenges around record management, and we have also put a big pressure in the last financial in the last year to look for more additional funds. Unfortunately, because of the competing demand challenges, most of the staff we requested we have not been allocated any budget. We'll come back later and talk to you about the issues of infrastructure, which includes accommodation, which includes vehicles, which includes ICT. Again, we have a big challenge. With a 400 million deficit, no budget allocation extra, as the CFO indicated, our last hope is our in-depth negotiation with President on the bridging finance that they need to give us. But they said strictly give us a cash stabilization strategy or general strategy that will ensure that we are in fact carrying around the situation. To put in place a strategy that is or popular, which address some of the questions that members raised. One, we are looking at reducing the amount of cost that we pay in terms of handling fees for administering the plan. And in fee, as I said earlier on, I'm looking at honorary members who raised the questions on consultants, is basically that 2.5 billion is the amount that we pay to all pay CPF and Delaney for taking the cash and going to various people throughout the country to pay people grants. That is very expensive, as I indicated earlier, when we talked about them covering their own staff, their own equipment, their own insurance, to insure the money itself. The choice is that they approach the chosen companies to guard those hardcore rifles to guard the money and those secure trucks, etc. Now, we think, as you said, honorable member, we have a team at National that works with the CFO looking at an alternative payment model so that we can reduce that 2.5 billion. We have demonstrated to children that actually we can reduce that within the next 12 months to about 1.9 billion at the start if we were to reproductively move towards an electronic payment. We pay roughly 30 rand per transaction on each transaction, if we consider to pay a grant, charge up a grant before that transaction. Somebody might get 3 rand times that 3 rand. If you pay that 30 rand, if that might be transferred electronically, like you would pay to a salary via the ACB, what we call the care in Europe, you actually can reduce that cost to almost 4-5 rand transaction from 30 rand. A significant saving. And we have been embarking on initiatives to get people to move towards electronic payment, but it will actually significantly cut down the cost. But also other benefits that I indicated, safety of the money to the beneficiary. And the beneficiary may not require to get the whole money lump sum at once. They can draw it maybe in two or three tranches.
The next one on the issue report around the irregular expenditure. Again, that question is very valid, and in fact, maybe I must clarify that it's not that the money did not go to the poor or to the energy people. What Solicitor General defines as irregular expenditure is when you give the money to the poor but you do not follow a proper procedure in terms of your procurement or also in terms of internal control process. Now, the reason they gave the appeal is that it might as well be that if you don't follow those processes, you might then be unable to pick up corruption and other activities. Hence, they want to ensure that government departments comply with supply chain management policy of government so that you don't just give work or award contracts to certain people. It might as well be maybe to friends. So the final of the general raises the trouble. Yes, indeed, we can assure the members that this year, 2019, we have almost wiped out it. If there will be irregular expenditure, it might be things that come from previous year or very little amounts that explain this kind of explaining why. But if people don't go to millions, then this is basically the strategy that we put into place. All the necessary pillars of supply chain are going to be addressed. The other thing, indeed, I must mention that, remember that we've got a financial misconduct board. You mentioned the issue of discipline. We are investigating the cases. We are not that because they are reported, we close the chapter. We are getting to take those people who have incurred that where necessary to pass in terms of through the disciplinary process and report to the Public Service Commission as required by the Public Service Regulations. There was an issue on the other CPMs that were cited on SRPI. I have my colleague, once I finish, I'm going to talk about the status so that government wants to give more money to the youth, the city has promised to assist in that particular one. Recovery of money from fraud stars. I have a person who is an expert in fraud star management here, maybe over there. But just in summary, yes, once the person goes to court or a person comes forward and says, I was not supposed to get this land, you find that acknowledgement of debt, and SIU has got a unit that actually does collection. We are now currently negotiating to move that function further so that they focus on legal processes, law enforcement, changing the process. When it comes to collection, that collection function will take over maybe in this including financial year. Because we do have a system of debt collection already, so we just incorporate it in our system. But yes, there are financial monitoring reports that will indicate the age analysis. When this person signed a collection letter, how many installments paid today, what is the balance still outstanding? We do have those details reports that will be given on a monthly basis. In fact, we work with DSD because all the plans are reported in the department book in terms of financial reporting. The 400 million monitoring system, the 400 million overspending. Yes, again, the comment is spot on. We are working with Treasury and DSD and initiating the task team to ensure that testing we determine what was the reason for the overspending. We have already identified the problem. One of the major problems is breaking the monitoring system. When SAFA started 2007, first year of operation, SAFA reported a saving of 10%. However, that was not a real saving because actually we had commitments that were close to about 400 million already, 320 something, something like 305 years to the effect. So if you look at the commitment, because we are on a net accounting basis, you would think we have made a saving, but in the new financial year, then you have those commitments that you need to take on board. Part of the challenge also was that CAFA, for the long time after its establishment, it remained without a chief financial officer. There was an exercise where we were hunting for a CFO until the current CFO moved, that's about 2 years. Now, we have done a lot of work in terms of putting out those monitoring systems and also ensuring that this particular thing is actually affected. If Treasury agrees on our strategy, turnaround strategy, we're hoping that if the this year that coming, that other year, we will only have a balance of about 110 something over 10, and then we will break even. Because the effect we can only recoup this over a period of 3 years. And that is the determination. In fact, Treasury has already given us a target that in the fourth year we must actually come with a saving of 450 million. So we are striving towards that. And the only strategy that's very much going to be important is that one of migrating people to the new payment system. And this unrelated consultant, I think the 2.5 billion addresses paid can be still, which is the one that we are trying by all means to reduce. We were compliant with section implemented in all the regions, if not Wino, cutting edge, clean. When the teacher was saying, the region informed me that they already in December looked at those families, especially the old folks with 8 children. They are currently getting support from us, government, in terms of the social relief, while their foster care applications are in progress. The regional office is working closely with the Department of Provincial GSD to ensure the expediting of the application for foster care grants. And there were other families also, not only that one, that were also supported, and those children, some of them are already getting the CSG. When it comes to the collusion and corruption, the Ubongo issue, we have established that the affected areas are about 40 in the same case. Now the question we have asked, even on this particular point, what happens to our social network, and whereby, you know, we have the traditional leaders, the churches, how the families like those fall to the fact nobody thinks of what is going on. Now, already we've done the similar exercise in Western case. In the case, they've started coordinating counseling that are involving all the key stakeholders. Well, you can't only fix this thing from system control, but there are things that are picking up corruption and also picking up those issues there, but who are not there. So communities will be coming together with us. We have already started the head of grand administration, and they will be meeting the chief in the Antata area, which is in Tilaha and the traditional council, to deal with exactly the same issues that we are currently with. The positive energy grant CDs will also take to that quickly. Certificated hygiene, can you certificate while waiting for grants? Well, eradicated, in terms of Regulation 11, we have alternative identification methods that are in place. I think what one of them can do to refer those people to SASA so that we can inform them of what alternatives. I think the best certificate will be fine, but we'll also induct an additional verification mechanism while they are waiting for the IT. Because I think that regulation was necessary to address a situation where a person must not start up because you are waiting for an IT. In the meantime, there could be assistance that are certificated by Johnson. Thank you very much, Chair.
Any discussion on
thank you, Chair President. There was a question regarding other fields of social infrastructure. By other fields, we are referring to beneficiaries who have applied for social grants, and indeed those grants have been approved. While they are waiting for the payment to be accepted, we also provide the subsidy. We also refer to beneficiaries who have appealed against our decision in terms of not approving their grant. We want to look after them. Thirdly, we look to beneficiaries for whom we have reviewed their grant, and as a result of our reviewer, their grant has been stopped. Once they are challenging those issues, we provide a formula to them. That's why we are sending to them as other appeals. Therefore, they are not for the year and that.
Okay. Thank you.
program of Matupatila is auxiliary social workers. That others are already on the ground doing the work. We also try to have a program of young mothers who are recipients of grants. We are looking into that because some of the recipients of child support grants are unemployed, or most of them are unemployed. So the department is also trying to look into that. And though this is not accurate, but a bigger number of people that are doing a home-based care is young people. They are also working with the Department of Social Development at a provincial level. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
personal, does the department decide on a percentage of grant? Is it the province that asked for that percentage? Because as you know, the Northern Cape is also the poorest province. The biggest province area wise, but some of the poorest people, because we don't have a big economy in the Northern Cape. Especially with grants to children and food packages for the people of the Northern Cape. I would like to know how those percentages get worked out. Is it according to the number of people? And if you can give me some answers on that. And I hope that for this coming year, that I will not leave the budget with 2.5%. It will be really the cost of the Northern Cape. You know, we've got the Western. Northwestern Cape and the Western Coast is also part of the Northern Cape.
Thank you. Thanks, Professor. Professor, on Cape, on this presentation, I think it's on page 22 something. But there's something about the bank that is in here, and it said the other bank complied with, I want to ask, with the subpoenas, and the Italian bank is the only bank that did not comply. I'd like to know if it did not comply, are you still depositing the money in that same bank, or did you stop it? And so a suggestion that I would love to make is when SASA is employing social workers in the department, I think SASA wants them to do their social worker work, but the majority of them in our region, they are sitting in the office. That is why you will get the cutting edge going to the people, finding these cases before the department could find these cases. But I think if the department can suggest to them to do what they are employed for, not to sit in the office, but an employed administrative class or whoever to do the job in the offices, because we've got a problem in our region. They will think maybe there are no cars, but we don't have cars also now. But if we want to do the work in the community, we are going there by foot, because it's not even 5 kilometers from downtown to the community where they are supposed to. It's not even a kilometer for them to go and send the people down the ground there.
Progress that has been made. You see,
a very strategic question that we're asking ourselves, looking at what was the government objective to establish the region. What is the breathing effective in terms of impact on some of those priority objectives? And this has come to, we have come to a decision, like the minister's view as well, and she has been very much instrumental in ensuring that we do a business process review. Now, we're going to be a part of that review, or we call it business process engineer, embarking on a change management process that will ensure that the new way in which we'll be doing our business is in fact inculcated to every level within the organization. Yes, there are also issues of finances, as you see, and our financial health is not too good. We might, when you look at this thing, we should be by now at the ICU. We therefore have to prioritize the work that we do. With all the competing demands that I've mentioned, I've taken rounds throughout all the 9 countries, and I think for myself, the situation on the ground, there's a lot of change. Going to require a lot of financial injection in order to turn around some of the issues. So we've noted that as one of our priorities. In fact, in our planning session, we had three problems. In terms of OSD, not too much for BAFA, because the categories of workers that have been identified on OSD do not really affect us. For example, in long debate about our own doctors, whether in fact they do qualify. But when we either, when we consulted with the DDSA and other stakeholders, it came clear that they do not quite qualify because they are not doing clinical work. Our doctors are more on country authority reviews or national assessment that are conducted, etc. We are also working on a strategy to look into how the EU are going forward. Linked to that, whether our medical model, the new assessment model is working. Yes, for now I'll say it is working. We're looking at a number of things there. One of the important ones is to ensure that there's a common understanding of all the doctors who are doing the medical assessment of what is the expectation. Because it's not about only your qualification as a medical officer and understanding of medicine. But it's also understanding of startup policy on the application of the Act and the regulations with regard to disability management. And lastly, also the administrative part. It has been costing some incentives, especially technically, that we are talking with to find a company to do the administration for us. Now we're standardizing the tools at a certain level. I can't remember, but take it 5 lines, the assessment. So those are the kind of things that have ensured also that we also start to be cooperating. We plan to get the, I can pick up the question and show quality of the how do you determine the grand number? How can Northern Cape be so small? Well, I think it's largely driven by the population that is here. Northern Cape is the least in terms of the number of people that are right there. But in terms of applying the criteria for qualification, the standardized across the country, for each grant that if you are earning a certain amount per annum or joint income or both spouses, and other grant that it applies across the board in the same fashion. Are you still depositing money into the bank account of the car? It's an important question. We have debated this. In fact, all this is yesterday, yeah, long paid paradise around. The current regime or framework that we have allows beneficiaries to choose the method of payment. They make their choice. If they want to be paid cash at the pay point, they allow them. If they want to get it from a bank, they allow them. But more so, if they want to choose a particular bank, we don't dictate to them whether you go to FNB or ALPA or ITARA, etc. However, we have identified the need for banks to cooperate with us, especially issues of joint accounts, the issues of reconciliation. We need to be able to account for the last bank.
if we give the money to the bank, we must not show it's not an amount, an account owned by syndicate or the fraudulent account. So some cooperation will require from the bank. So far, this has been an area that we have not been winning. We've met a couple of times with the banking council, even to the extent of negotiating better deals for our beneficiaries, for instance, the fiscal accounts and that, etc. But we are getting there. In fact, there are more coming to the class now. They are willing to work with us. But as I said, we are talking about the possibility of actually SAFRA having the power to dictate how we pay them. If we now say that this kind of major choice, but if we say SAFRA would like to detain it, which is the best, which method we believe is the best way of paying our debt? And it might well actually be the regulation. But again, some people might take us to task and say, we are taking a particular right from the beneficiary, which is a principle of being put down. But we are looking at those opportunities. The other one, on workers, social workers, are going to do things well. Maybe the duty will add on that, but we are aware that it's not only the social workers right in the KKK area. I think stakeholders must come to the party here. Society must be ensuring that children who are vulnerable, whether they are orphans, whether they are called targeted households, or whether they are people who are supposed to be getting a benefit, they do access. One of the comments made in that case on Titan Air Sources was that the old mama went consistently to Home Affairs offices. They said, go to the city lady, who said, don't let stuff. And he was not considered a post until he ran out of cash. Again, put that the community really works together. Take these cases to social development offices or SAFRA offices, where we can look at the options of SID and other ways of helping the people who need assistance. But I agree, social workers are critical as well. I know we have challenges of social workers in the country, but there's a range of other funds in that are available to other the children and other various other people in the state. But it is, you might really embarrass that going further. Yes, I think I've covered, there's only one question that I missed, which looks like Mr. Mackay took up and quickly take that on.
Can I just make a follow-up on that one of it? Do you pay now, even if the account are dormant, you are still paying the money into those accounts?
No. I think the dormant accounts, once they are identified, they are frozen. And the issue about them is how do we collect that money back? In fact, we are engaging to say that whether that money comes in the SAFRA or goes to the revenue fund, in some instances, we find that money, the provincial revenue fund, they claim on it. Because some of them will pay it before the establishment of the agency. But the therefore, I think, can add on that particular one, which is completely.
Another follow-up on the
I think the CEO has covered it to say, members should not be worried the money is safe. We have had an issue just recently last week with the Itala CEO. There was a problem with the Itala that there has been some changes in terms of leadership. But now for the CEO for Itala being there, he has agreed and assured us that he will actually deposit that money back to us.
If I may add to the question of Itala, our own firm was reviewing those plans to ensure that those beneficiaries are alive and get the qualified pocket advance. But coming to the question of loan sharks, we have taken a decision to engage the financial services board to have the effect that of the loan of money to talk to their business. And the people who are loan sharks have discovered that they are not able to our motion, the financial services board, and we also aim to bring on board security agencies in terms of identifying those people. But over and above, responsibility to mitigate our own potential. Without that education, we'll keep on going from start to start.
That little part not out the hut in the rural area where we will find that person simply because he or she doesn't go to the rallies and where there are campaigns made. He or she doesn't go there. I wanted to ask what if this information can go down to them because the folks, really the people that we are working with in the department, they are very, very high, I would say. They are very high. They don't come down. They don't see us as people who they can work with, wherever we want to help for the benefit of the community.
Yeah, maybe I didn't catch the answer on the contribution of the OAC onto the space. But he said he already answered the question. Indeed, when I remember, I've got a written report, I think one that can attest to that. And why would it come in the Western Cape where there was an interaction of various stakeholders with FAFA around the initial closure. One of the critical stakeholders, like the district has mentioned, is the NCR. That was part of that process. And they actually arrested a number of people who were actually victimizing our people. I have also taken the matter personally with the NCR board, and they actually indicated that there are instances that one of the Western Cape government is fighting, and they're already working with us. But also, they do have thousands of people that they can, I think, we've to formalize the partnership with them around the issue of education for our people, and also not only them, other enforcement, law enforcement agents that can actually deal with these people that we think of that. The impact of OSD, I indicated it was not much, but the impact of salary increases in terms of both Resolution 3 and 5 was enormous. Resolution 3 alone impacted on us 109 million, 110 million. But overall, we had to have an impact to 117 million over and above what was in the budget of us actually to pay for additional salary increases. Because we are still aligned with government. What FAFA, the nature of FAFA is that in terms of the collective agreement that struck at the National African Council, we actually have to implement that. What we got from Treasury was only 34 million. Now we have an impact of 170 million only because of last year's financial crisis that is impacted on everyone. Treasury told us they were looking for about from all the national departments to assist in covering of costs. I think how many billion, the same about 10 billion or 13 billion that I said they are looking for in the budget. So it does impact significantly on the spend and the settlement cost.
Yesterday I was reading the report of the existence of the cream of the local, the intellectuals that are in a university. They had a conference last year. And one of the things that they gave is something that was identified in the department, the shortage of social workers. Secondly, the pronouncement that was made by our past minister, previous minister, from the border saying that social work is a scarce profession right now. Because most social workers go to school, then thereafter they look for work as any other thing except social development. I don't know why, we are not effective enough, and we all know that young people, when they start working, when they go
expect to meet the halfway to enter update from our nation. Thank you very much.
Sharing the information that made us more informed and more well.